Greetings, Spirit Life family, in the name of the Lord. You know, there are things that you grow to love in life. There are people you grow to love in life. And Tommy is one of my dearest friends. And I can say this after 38 years of ministry, that you bounce off many ministers, many pastors, many systems throughout the world. And I can tell you of a surety that when it comes to uprightness, integrity, and honor, Tommy upholds the office of pastor at such a way that it brings dignity and honor to pastor and restoration to the office of pastor. So could you put your hands together again for my dear friend, Pastor Tommy? And that's a big thing. I know pastors who will not support law enforcement openly. I know leaders all over the nation who will not support law enforcement. So when there is a church that will support law enforcement openly, my heart goes out, my heart stands up, and I want you to know that there are believers all over the nation and the world who are beginning, their eyes are opening, and they're beginning to stand up and support law enforcement, and that's a great honor. I also want to say to Spirit Life, you are a very unique people. You're a very unique brand. You're able to host an event such as the Faith in Blue and not be ashamed of it. And it takes a heart of courage to get behind one of the last bulwarks of reinforcement of life, reinforcement of hope, preservation of hope, which is law enforcement. There's a preservation there. And I think that if we don't begin to unite together real soon, our children will inherit nothing but a boiling pot of chaos. And what stands between ultimate chaos and a breakdown of civilization is the uniting together, not only of the people of God, but every conscience-filled citizen of the United States. And so I want to honor Spirit and Life for what you're doing and the stand that you've taken. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I've been married 23 years. My daughter's 21 and 19. I'm such a happy father. I wanted a boy, and God gave me two girls. And he did that because I was such a caveman growing up. Well, it's unlikely that at 19 I would make a commitment to the Lord Jesus Christ after the life that I lived. And I woke up the next day and I was totally transformed. I was transformed to the point that within 6 months of being saved, I said yes to Christ and went into ministry. And I was in one of the missionary Baptist churches that believed in on-the-job training. I see a lot of silver hair. You'll remember this. Remember when they didn't send you off to Bible college? They trained you in the church. How many of you can raise your hand if you remember the day when they had on-the-job training inside of the ministry? Well, I went to a church like that. And after a few years, the Lord began to show me the future. He allowed me to see that America was going to be divided along racial lines. And those racial lines were going to become a source of contempt and violence and chaos that's going to disrupt every arena of society. And at that time, I was working with gang members, Aryans, people that were in every type of violent gang you can imagine. And I mean the violent, the Crips, the Bloods. There are individuals who were with the Aryan. And I was very successful at reaching them and bringing them together. And because of that, we had a problem. If we bring them together and they begin to kill one another because of blood oaths, covenant oaths, to death. In the gang culture, it's a blood oath, it's a covenant oath to death. And so when you come to an event and you see someone of a different gang and they may have participated in the death of one of your set, then your responsibility and duty by covenant is to take the life of one of the gang members, even if it wasn't the individual. It could have been an associate gang member. And I felt a deep sense of responsibility for bringing those types of individuals together. And I would be surrounded by gang members in the middle of the street, and I would bring Jesus Christ to them as Lord and Savior. And they would say yes to the Lord Jesus Christ. I'd say, take hands right now, and we're going to pray and take Jesus into our hearts. And those gang members in the middle of the street with the rain pouring down would take hands and accept Jesus Christ as their Savior. And I had that type of effectiveness with white and black and Hispanic, Latino. And I realized that there would be a problem. So the Lord gave me an idea to call it a color-free zone. It means there's no supreme race or color, but citizens working together for lawful expression within the bounds of the Constitution. How many of you think that's a really good idea? No supreme race or color, but citizens working together for lawful expression within the bounds of the Constitution. So as we begin to declare, it's a color-free zone, and that means that we're free from color bias. We're free from color bias. It began to expand, it began to grow, and then eventually I was asked to go to South Africa, and they gave me a city of 300,000 people to bring unity with 300,000 people. The whites, blacks, coloreds, Afrikaans, they were killing one another over there. Nelson Mandela had spent 27 years in prison, had been let out. They were having their first election. The De Beers, which was a diamond-controlling family. How many of you know remember the De Beers? Well, they kept an iron fist on the South African government. So after I arrived there, they decided they were going to give me a city of 300,000 people because they were having their first open election in the history of the nation. So because of all the death and the bloodshed, they said, can we unite this city? So we were successfully able to unite a city within 1 week. I was there 2 weeks. A revival started that lasted about 2.5 years. But we were successfully able to unite the city with the community, with the schools, including the Catholic, Anglican, Protestant, Charismatic. They all came together and unite them, the education, with the business sector. And it was a great movement in the city that had never happened. Fast forward, coming back to the United States, I saw something on the horizon, and the Lord began to allow me to see what law enforcement experiences. And in just a second, I'm going to read to you a little bit about what law enforcement experiences. It's going to be quite shocking. Well, sometimes it's easy to sit on the outside and judge the difficulty of someone's occupation. It's easy to do it as an outside observer. I call them armchair generals. But when you go inside of the wheel and you actually spend time and you go out on the beat, and I've been in the police car and I've done the rides with them. But I went a little bit further. I actually worked for the Bureau of Prisons about 19 or 20 years ago. And I read the case files. These are individuals coming into my caseload. And I have to do a surprise check after midnight on this individual? My God. They took a human being, put them in a parking lot, doused them with gas, and lit a match. And I've got to do a surprise check on this individual after midnight when they least expect it. Anyone want my job? So our government came up with the bright idea, our prisons are full. So we need to let people out early. And I don't mean 15% early, doing 85% of your time. I'm talking about a truncated, they're going to let them out way early. And there has been no time for the heart to be readjusted and the mind to really calculate what they've done to society. So they let them out, and then someone else had the bright idea and said, let's not give them an ankle bracelet. Let's give them human ankle bracelets. How many of you would like to be a human ankle bracelet? So they let them out. They're still incarcerated, and they go to this building that houses men and women. They go to this building, and I'll share with that why that's important to us. They go to this building, men and women. The doors lock at night, on staff counselors, on staff psychologists, on staff. And so it is a federally regulated BOP, Bureau of Prisons, facility. And when I started working there, they would let the individuals, after 1 year, they let them back out into the community, a slow release into the community. When they're let in this community, they come into my caseload. And I covered Kansas and I covered Missouri. So I did a spot check on a Hell's Angel one night. Okay, Hell's Angel is not an angel that works for Satan. Or kind of it is. But these are biker gangs. The biker gang that's responsible for meth and every type of dangerous drug and weapons distribution throughout the nation, okay? They don't show up at the PTA and help fund a soccer club, all right? And I did a spot check after midnight on his place. I had to show up at your job once a week unannounced. I had to show up at your place of your residence once a week. When you're in the community, I have to show up at your residence when you least expect it. You know, like a mother-in-law or father-in-law that wants to make sure that the grandchild is being taken care of. Because, you know, we take care of grandchildren. I've got a grandchild now. Better than our children take care of them, right? Anyone a helicopter grandparent? Raise your hand and wave at me. Okay, just admit it. You are. And whenever I did the spot check on the Hell's Angel who was bringing semi-loads of cocaine and heroin and meth and every type of drug across the border through the right lane with the Border Patrol agent, I did that spot check on him way out in Missouri in the middle of nowhere in the country at night. And I did that spot check. And I knock on the door. It's Mr. Hatcher, I need to come in and check your place and use that designated phone that has to be clear 24 hours a day. Well, this man who's so huge, he's got blue eyes, blonde hair down to here. And this is one of the biggest men up to that point I'd ever seen in my life. And I knocked on the door and he answered the door. He looks down at me. True story. In fact, this man is so terrifying in presence, you have the feeling that you're going to get gangrene if he bites you. And he looks down at me and he says these words, chilled me to my bone, he said. Mr. Hatcher, you know, I really like you. But if you catch me violating, it's better for me to kill you and do 8 years for involuntary manslaughter than let you catch me with a third time offense with drugs, because then I'll have to do the hard 40. Well, I did the math real quick. I said, okay. My life is worth 8 years for involuntary manslaughter, and he knows it. And if he gets caught with a dime bag of weed, he's going to do 40 years, and he knows it. So my life was not worth 40 years. To him, it was worth 8 years. And that's also code way of saying, you might surprise me one night, and I'll have to surprise you right back. And so my wife told me the greatest advice I ever heard in my life 20 years ago. She said, you carry a gun, get a bulletproof vest, or you get out of this business. Guess what I did? I said, I need to put in my resignation. I am done with this job. But faith and blue exist because there are men who did not walk away from the job. Right? And so I want to read a quick list of what it is that they do. 20% of law enforcement, I'm going to hit you with a lot of stats and statistics and figures right now. 20% of law enforcement today is former military. As former military, very strict, very disciplined, and they come into law enforcement because it's one of the only places they can get a job that matches what they're used to doing. Now watch this. In military, you're trained to defend our nation against all enemies, both foreign and domestic, right? So now you're intrinsically hardwired by nature of the job and nature of the training. You're intrinsically hardwired to protect and defend. You're hardwired to protect and defend. Now that feeds back into the first law of nature. The first law of nature is self-preservation, right? Everyone wants to stay alive at all costs. Everything wants to live. And I'll tell you what, the old man that was pushed over the boat that you told about, Tommy, it wasn't about saving the girl, it was about trying to live, right? But on the way, he saved the girl. So sometimes in the first law of nature, self-preservation, and God gave us another law of nature, which was reproduce and multiply as you expand in the earth. First law of nature, police and law enforcement are hardwired to take another law. And that means we're going to defend the citizens of the United States at all costs. Well, let's fast forward. In this list of vocational stress inherent to the office, especially with these types of statistics, 20% of military come in, 20% of the 20% of law enforcement have undiagnosed PTSD. Let that sink in. They have undiagnosed PTSD, and they're currently serving. So I began to realize that part of what we're experiencing is a situation where a job is being performed and society really isn't understanding the nature and depth of the particular job that we've asked them to do. So they've got PTSD. Many of them have PTSD diagnosis and undiagnosed PTSD diagnosis. Here's the second fact about law enforcement. Law enforcement, 40% of law enforcement now, because of the current climate, are saying that 40% of the situations that they are supposed to engage and stop because it's against the law, they do not engage and they will not stop it. Because they don't want the media at their homes, they don't want their children stigmatized at school, and they don't want to be the poster boy on the nightly news. How many of us understand why that would make you stop and not do your job? So they're hardwired to preserve and protect, but they're not doing that. And why aren't they doing that? Because the stigma now is causing law enforcement to quit the force at the most alarming rates. In fact, I talk with Sheriff Rigolato, I talk with Sheriff Walton, and they tell me right now that especially in Oklahoma, in Tulsa, and the state, and I just met with the Attorney General, and I'm getting ready to meet with him. I met with the DA on Monday. They tell me the numbers are lower than they've ever been in the history of our nation. That's because of all the social pressure. Now, who would like to have a job where the job you do is hated throughout the nation? And I want to say thank you, Spirit Life. Thank you, Tulsa community, for standing publicly behind law enforcement, because there are so many who are not willing to stand publicly. But I believe that the show of public support that you're doing today, it means much more than the average person in the United States even understands, especially in light of what's happening. So I created a term. It's called the 4P syndrome. So could someone say this with me? 4P syndrome. Now, this 4P syndrome is really important. I created this term because of what law enforcement experiences. Today, you're going to see law enforcement on these grounds. But everyone that sees a law enforcement officer is not going to think 4P syndrome. 4P syndrome, I created the term from working with law enforcement and doing mental evaluations of law enforcement. It's 4Ps, the letter P. 4Ps. It's the pike, parasympathetic, paralysis, parallel. Pike, parasympathetic, paralysis, parallel. 4Ps. Pike, parasympathetic, paralysis, parallel. And what that means is take a pike fish, put it inside of a container, and introduce some guppies. What's that pike going to do? He's going to eat those guppies. He's going to have breakfast, lunch, and he's going to have dinner, right? Introduce a glass partition. And leave the glass partition. He's going to strike. Why? Because he's hardwired. That's food. In nature, they're natural enemies. One runs from the other. But with that glass partition there, you're going to see something change. Pretty soon, he'll be hardwired in his mind that even though he's supposed to, by nature, eat the guppy, he won't eat it. Pretty soon, he'll be hardwired to think, I can't eat that guppy. Remove the partition, and he just swims around. Has anyone ever seen in nature that when a dog sees a cat, it naturally does what? John Osteen tells a great story about his big German shepherd that he takes for a walk. And there was always this cat standing over there. And this cat would go, shh, and it wouldn't back down. And John Osteen said that he took the position. He said, cat, if you only knew what my big German shepherd, Fluff, will do to you. And one day, his dog got away from him. And made it to that cat, because in nature, they're natural enemies, right? And he said that cat did such a job on his big German shepherd that his dog tucked its tail and took off running. And he said, oh, my goodness. And that's kind of what, in his example, he said, that's kind of what the adversary tries to do to God's people, wants us to take off running. But God picks a day where it's time to stand up for what's right, right? So the pike parasympathetic is where the pike now is friends, and I go to friends' homes that are like this. They have animals that in nature are diversely opposite, but yet they get along so well. I have two cats, Millie, Millie, and Theo. And I have two dogs. I have a Yorkie and a high-strung Bichon Frise. Really high-strung, right? And they get along so well, and they lay down on the bed. But in nature, it's not so, right? So what's happening is, with law enforcement, the same way that Pike is not engaging in situations it's supposed to engage in, that's what's happening with law enforcement. And for every second that the intervention from law enforcement goes on, it exponentially multiplies the possibility that someone's not going to go home alive or that there's going to be a disastrous consequence, because it's not worth it to them and their families to engage. So I want to show you one of the things that we do. First of all, let me read this really quickly, because some of your jobs may or may not have this element of danger. In law enforcement, this is what they see. They see or handle dead bodies. The average law enforcement officer over the course of their career is going to deal with 150 to 178 physical encounters of some kind. How many of you go to work and you deal with physical encounters of some kind? 158 in the course of your career. And these are violent. And then you show up, you get a domestic call, and the officer rushes to the scene. The woman calls and said, "He's attacking me." Well, when I worked, I lived long enough and been in situations where the attacker was the female and not the male. But the officer shows up and stops the man from attacking the woman. The first thing she says when they grab the man is, "You leave my husband alone." And the officer's like, "Man, danged if you do and danged if you don't," right? And so it's a really thankless job in a lot of ways, right? And they handle dead bodies. They deal with severe assaults. They're at risk for PTSD because of all the related shootings, armed conflicts, abusive violence, children. And then they show up at severe traffic accident, and they're the ones who screen it off and they handle the dead bodies. And all these horrific things that you see on TV, law enforcement officers don't run from it like 9/11. They go right into the situation. Now, who's going to take that out of their mind? Who's going to help them sleep at night? And then you're in a job, watch this, where in the first year, you officers go home and they say, "Let me tell you, honey, about everything that happened today at work." After about 6 months, law enforcement officers realize that their wives are being affected by the nature of the intrinsic, inherent vocational stress associated with doing that job. How many of you understand what I'm talking about? And they realize, "I can't talk to my wife or husband about it," because they're female law enforcement. So they go inside, and now they become walking volcanoes. But how many of you can go home and talk to your spouse about what happened to you every day at work? We can. But they can't. And then they've got another compounded issue. It's a force multiplier. "I can't even talk to my partners about some things because I might get flagged for a mental health issue. I can't go and talk to a counselor because it'll go in my record. It'll affect my pension. And it'll affect my ability to retire. It'll affect my 401k. It'll affect my ability to put my children through school." So further, what do? They go inside. So what we're doing is we're working with senators through Color Free, Crime Free to turn this around and get law enforcement officers the help that they need mentally, emotionally, and we've even got systems that provide help for their families so that the families of children. Did you know that on average, 18 to 20 months in Tulsa, there's a suicide? SWAT officer called me a couple of weeks ago. One of the officers in Tulsa committed suicide a couple of months ago. And the SWAT officer, he was having a tough time dealing with it. He called and says, "Hey, doctor," he calls my wife and I, "Dr. Hatcher, I'm having a problem, one of our guys." Every 18 to 20 months in Tulsa. So in doing a job like that, I believe that because of the nature of the inherent stress in the vocation for our first line responders and our civil servants and law enforcement and military, I believe that we owe it as a society to provide every available tool and resource to help them do their job because of the nature of the job. How many of you agree with me? That's a good thing for us to do. Put your hands together. I believe they ought to know that we support them and we understand the nature of what we're asking them to do. Highest divorce rates, do you know? Law enforcement. And another one is construction workers, but that's another topic. I had to work that one out. But also highest divorce and highest problems with children, with their families. So we have resources we put together for law enforcement and their families and all first responders. And I want to thank Spirit Life for being a part of our support system. I'm going to go very quickly through some PowerPoints for you. So we have a partnership with law enforcement where we adopt a police station. Color-free, crime-free. Let's go. And when I point to my media guy, they can go ahead and change the slide. So we partner churches and communities. We're not colorblind. We just don't let color blind us. What's the most important crayon in the crayon box? If you have an important SMS message, it's an emergency message that has to be communicated, and the background is white, if you use a white crayon, will your message be seen? What if you have an emergency message and the background is black and you grab a black crayon? It won't be seen. What if you grab a brown or a tan or a yellow? It won't be seen. So at any given time, who's to say that any color has greater relevance or importance? No. God created all men equal. And that's where we ought to get back to human dignity and stop identifying one another by the outward indicators. So we're not colorblind. We just don't let color blind us. And we have a three-point goal: preserve the fabric of society, enhance community safety, and reinforce integrity of both community and law enforcement. And we use proactive means. We work together from all sides for peace, protection, and justice for our next generations, protecting tomorrow by working together today. So when we support law enforcement and civil order, it doesn't mean that we're overlooking injustice. What we do is we make a commitment to Sheriff Rigolato, Sheriff Walton, Chief Franklin, to the city government. We make a commitment as churches partnering together that when there are high-profile cases, we're not in charge of what the DA decides. We're not in charge of what a jury decides. We're not in charge of any of that, but we are committed. No matter what the outcome, we're going to stay at the table, and we're going to work together with law enforcement to find meaningful solutions that can help move our city and our nation forward. So we have an eight-point initiative, and in this eight-point initiative, it's a partnership with community, church, and here's the implementation strategy. Number one, we engage as a community before and after crisis. Now, you notice in that previous slide, there were police lights. When the police lights show up, that means something difficult or something bad has occurred, or it's a procession of a dignitary being led somewhere. So our commitment is, before and after crisis, we're going to stand together with you and beside you. And we're going to resist the urge to take that 5 minutes of fame soundbite in front of the news media to be disparaging to law enforcement. We make a commitment that we're never going to do that. We'll work behind the scenes with you to resolve and work things out for the betterment of the community. Then number two, we engage in role play scenario. Police are given the opportunity to present any situation that they want, and we agree we'll participate. And we will become the police officer in the situation and let them become the community, and then we can see how difficult it is. How many of you are familiar with Craig Johnson? Craig Johnson, he's a law enforcement officer. Watch this, this is what some people don't know. He lost his life, shot in the face, doing his job here. Here's what people don't know. He gave over 40 commands to de-escalate the situation. He de-escalated himself to death. Because there's a point where law enforcement has a job to do, but because of all the stigma, he didn't engage. He had the 4P syndrome. What's it going to look like? So sometimes the community doesn't understand that the guy was simply buying time, disobeying the 40 commands so that he could reach under his seat, grab a gun, and shoot the officer in the face. All he was doing was buying time. How do you know which civilian is buying time and which one is legitimate? Right? So police may want us to see something like that. We've agreed we'll see it, and we'll do the role play. Here's the next one. Number three, we'll listen to logistics. I know the logistics. I study the logistics. They would blow your mind. You would never want any one of your children to be in law enforcement and show up to a situation with those particular types of odds without being adequately prepared and trained and understanding what they're walking into. And 4P syndrome is not an option. Next, engage in community presented. So here's the issue with black people. Black people say, well, you don't understand. You don't understand what's happened over 200 years. You don't understand. You don't. So the community, our law enforcement here, I want to give a shout out to the blue. They said, we will agree that any situation that the public wants to present, we'll role play and become the citizen. so that we can see what it is and try to understand from your perspective what it is you want us to understand. Isn't that awesome that law enforcement is saying yes all over the nation? And we have 7 cities onboarding right now as we speak. And law enforcement is saying we want to be a part of fixing it together. And then next, we engage in the participation. We have a symbol, and it's on many churches, and we have hundreds. We have over 600 citizens and law enforcement who use that symbol that you saw, and it says they're involved in a use of force. They're involved in a mental health. We have mental health, use of force, and we even have some human dignity training. Next. So you're hosting quarterly events. We're going to be partnering with Faith in Blue. We support everything that Faith in Blue is doing because we understand right now that if this society is going to be redeemed, if there's going to be a radical turnaround, that the faith community is going to lead the way in seeing the nation restored in communities all over the nation. And that's our 3-point strategy. I want to go to the next one because you're already doing point number 5, this media event. So what I would encourage is, if you're not doing it already, on every one of your rotating screen, take Officer Terrell, who gets up sometimes and he walks out and he feels like, man, it's a us against them day. They don't know that I'm serving them. It shouldn't be us against them, but that's what they think. And then there are communities who's people in the community who think it's us against them. So what we suggest is if you would put on a rotating screen the officers doing things with the young people and do that consistently, putting it up. That way it helps the young people and it removes that barrier of stigmatization. And then the law enforcement, they've agreed to put the same rotating screen with your young people up so that the officers can see it every day, and it removes the stigma that it's not us against them. There are people in the community who are standing for them. Next. And then precinct displays the media. Next. And then supporting local precinct. And that means praying for them, getting cards out, and then showing that open show of support and having at least 2 officers come out by quarterly, having them come out and then do something and make sure that it's publicly known and then be willing to help. I want to say, here's our last one, our last slide. One of the things you're going to see in the display and in the support, your church has done something that only 2 churches have done. We have a use of force system. Spirit Life helped to get that use of force system. It's a $5,500 unit, and that unit is something law enforcement works out with so that they can know where pressure is being applied. You know why it's important? If you ask any officer, how many pounds per square inch pressure does it take to crush the trachea? 99.9 will go, I don't know. So we show them what parts of the body that the pressure is being applied and how they can avoid a George Floyd situation, which saves their careers and it saves their lives. And I have a thank you. One more slide. It's a thank you slide. And it says, thank you for listening. I want to say at the conclusion of a thank you to Tommy. Thank you for what you're doing. Your help in supplying a use of force sensor so that officers can be aware is already being used in law enforcement right now. And that is huge. I'll tell you why. Not only did Gavin go to jail, the Chauvin go to jail, the law enforcement officer with his knee on George Floyd, he's not the only one that went to jail. The 3 officers who were standing there observing, they went to jail also, because they didn't understand what was happening. So we helped them understand it. We helped them stay out of jail. We helped them preserve their community, preserve their families and the integrity of their families, because whatever an officer goes through, their family goes through. And as a community, we can get right in the middle of it and lower all of the crime, the statistics, and create harmony in every community with law enforcement. So I want to say thank you for what you're doing. It is not going unnoticed. And the impact of what you're doing here at this church is having reverberations throughout the nation. And it's going to continue to, because we're going to take the one that you donated, and that's going to be our loaner to law enforcement. It's going to continue to be our loaner unit for mental health and stress with application of force and pressure. So thank you so much for your time. I pray that God's hand would continue to rest upon you and that you will understand that great things have small beginnings. Your impact is being noticed and it's felt all over the nation. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.